I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart.
Hello, patrons, to another Geeks with Shields review. I'm Lord Commander Ulrich.
And I'm a short brother, Axel Wright.
This is your chance.
It's been a bit.
I was going to say, this is Slagathor's chance to introduce herself.
Fair. Oh.
Hello, it's Slagathor.
Yeah, I waited for like a half beat, admittedly, but that's only half a beat. So that's my fault.
I just didn't know if I was supposed to come in at that time or not. You know, I don't want no premature Slagathoring.
Of course. Gotta be real tough about it. But it's been a while since we did a just review of something. When was the last time we did that?
That's a very good question.
Marvels last year? I think we did that.
We did the Marvels. There haven't been, there wasn't any big Christmas movie.
Well, weirdly enough, I think there's actually been plenty of things that are review worthy, but not things that are necessarily review worthy for both of us.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we'll blame it on the writer's strike.
Yeah. You probably could have easily done a review of Shogun, but I just would have been talking about the book, and I could have easily done a review of One Piece, but you would just be lost in the ether there. So, you know, this is one where we could both talk about.
And
Slagathor was involved too, because they saw it as well.
Yes, I did, and I loved it.
Yeah, no, Slagathor made a point of, if we talk about Fallout, she wanted in on the episode.
By the way, I don't think we had said it before then, but yeah, if you're just listening and didn't see the title, we're here to talk about the Fallout TV series.
Yeah. So, Slagathor, real quick, the format for our reviews are the first little bit, we go as spoiler-free as possible. We talk about whether we liked it or not and whether people should see it, and then we just go full, all-out spoilers.
All right, I'll be good.
And I don't believe in, bona fides for something like this, but I do think that knowing where someone's experience with Fallout gives context for the kind of experience we have. This is true for any adaptation, I think. I'm not saying you have to be a fan of a thing to be able to talk about adaptation. That's bullshit. But I do think knowing that someone is a fan of the thing previously helps contextualize what they think about it. So, that being said, I'm a casual Fallout fan. I have not played Fallout 1 or 2. I did not play New Vegas. I played a lot of 3, and I played a lot of 4. That's about it. And when I say a lot, I put maybe a few hundred hours into 3, and I've probably put about 200 hours into 4. So I know them very well, but I always preferred Elder Scrolls because I just like fantasy more than post-apocalypse kind of stuff. But, you know, I know Fallout well enough before going into the series.
I agree with you. I was introduced to it through Fallout New Vegas, through Ulrich, because when we first got together, that was the game he was playing with, and it was one that I really enjoyed watching him play and stuff. And then he played Fallout 3, and then when Fallout 4 came out, I was like, hell, I'm going to do it myself, and I played it, and I've got hundreds of hours into it. But other than that, I don't know anything. I watched a YouTube video where they went through every single vault that we do know of, and, you know, I learned about the history of each vault and stuff, but other than that, I am a total noob.
Yeah, I've gone down wiki holes about the various parts of the lore that I did not experience myself. I've read a lot about the events of Fallout 1 and 2, but I didn't play it myself.
Yeah. It's like I thought you got the order wrong. I played Fallout 3, then New Vegas.
Okay, they both came out and they were both played around the exact same time.
You're right. So I think I'm in the same boat as you two. I've got a couple hundred hours in each of the games. I've watched a couple YouTube videos. I've gone down a couple wiki holes. I love the lore of Fallout, but I have not made a dedicated brain space for it. It's cool, but I don't have the room in my brain to learn about the various presidents of the Enclave.
And I do recognize, I've been close enough to internet communities and reading about the games that I recognize that, generally speaking, there's kind of three layers of Fallout fans from what I've seen. There's the layer that we've all just described, where we like a lot of the modern ones and we've played them quite a bit. Then there's the one layer up, which is people who have put insane amounts of times into the modern games and have like delved deep into lore and know that. And then one layer up from that are people who actually played 1 and 2.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, and from what I can tell, the general consensus is that 1 and 2 are amazing. But as a person who got into it starting with 3, I will admit going back to them is a very odd concept because they are old CRPGs, and that's kind of just difficult to, you know, I'm a fan of classic Star Trek and Doctor Who. I know about going back to old things, but, you know, sometimes it's difficult.
If I don't have the nostalgia for it, I'm not, it's going to be a lot harder to overcome.
Yeah, but my point is that if you're listening to this and you're one of those people who's played Fallout 1 and 2, don't worry. I recognize that they're probably amazing games. There's a reason why the franchise exists beyond, you know, keeps on going. Sorry, none of us just have experience with that.
Anyway. No, I kind of wish we had been able to grab someone that was totally new to Fallout, because there's a couple I've talked to, including our good friend Scott Rubin, did not know Fallout universe at all and really enjoyed it. And I thought that was an interesting testament to the show.
Yeah, but it is interesting because he asked some pointed questions in the Discord about things that are not explained in the show that go without say. The big one is that there's a thing in Fallout called the Enclave, which is kind of like, if the Brotherhood of Steel are lawful neutral, then the Enclave are lawful evil. But they're similar in structure.
What does that say about me? Because this whole time I'm like, the Enclave, they want to make sense, right?
The Sith people? That's the Institute.
Yeah, okay. No, the Enclave is the bad guys from Fallout 3. I mean, they're actually bad guys in, I think, Fallout 1 as well, where they waged war on Fault Dwellers, remember correctly.
Yep, and they're coming back to Fallout 4, because the Enclave never dies, baby.
Yeah, the Enclave is like, so the Brotherhood of Steel's whole thing is like, protect the technology and advance, you know, but also we pull in people from, you know, a lot of walks of life, just not ghouls or mutants or anything like that. The Enclave is more like, we're direct descendants from the U.S. government, and we must kill everyone so that only we have control.
Racial purity undertones.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, something that we would definitely go through if we had to go through this in our modern time.
That is the strength of Fallout, is it's satire, but you're like, but it's not that far removed from contemporary shit.
It's also one of the most aggressive criticisms of capitalism that I've ever seen in a piece of capitalistic product.
Yep.
Like, Fallout as a series is so aggressively critical of capitalism and nationalism. And it's kind of wonderful.
So we can address, yes, there is an irony to it being produced by Amazon. That's the hellscape we live in. Listen, the big companies make the fun stuff. That's where we're at.
Yeah, so I don't know how long we're going to be here. We'll probably talk more about general Fallout franchise stuff going forward. But now, for the spoiler-free thoughts on the series, let's start with Slagathor.
I was pleasantly surprised. I was excited when I first saw the trailers. So I was excited and then I was skeptical because it was very much like, all right, like things were a little off in the trailers and stuff, but they definitely bumped it up when the series came out. I was very excited. All I wanted to do was binge it in the one day, but I'm really glad that we spread it out over like what, 4 days?
I think we did 2 episodes a day.
Yeah, so about 4 days. I'm really glad we spread it out, but I don't know. I just want to gush about it. So
okay, so that's a positive, Ulrich.
I was just like with her. And we talked about it, I think, on Discord and social media, that our initial concern was that everything looked a bit too clean for Fallout. Yeah. Not an issue in the show. I loved it. I don't know why Amazon didn't drop it week to week, other than the scuttlebutt is they got pushed back over Invincible, and that's a whole other conversation. I think this would have been great week to week. But yeah, no, the Mad Bastards pulled it off.
I just wish that they would have explained a few more things. Like, I get that we need something to lead us into the next season and stuff, but there's quite a few things that we'll probably talk about later that I wish that they would have touched upon and explored a bit more.
And as for my thoughts, I thought it was pretty good. I don't feel like I have to gush about it, but I thought it was solid. I thought there were certain aspects of it that were great, which will go. I don't have to. The ghoul. The ghoul is the best part, and if you see the trailers, yes. The ghoul, who is the actor, I had his name.
Walton Goggins.
Thank you. Walton Goggins is just acting everyone else out of the water.
It's Walton Goggins. He always shows up to play no matter how small the
role. I have a lot to say about him just because internet. I've got the internet's view on him.
The other two aren't bad. Ella Purnell, who plays the lead, is pretty solid. Aaron Moten, I think, is doing some interesting, very subtle things. I thought he was not doing a good job at first, but I've come around on that. But still, Walton Goggins just kills.
Again, Walton Goggins always brings it, but this one, it's just like, you didn't have to as hard as you did.
Additionally, and the effects are great. Like, there are some things that look, not really. There's a mutant creature at one point that looks very not there. But conversely, the Brotherhood of Steel armor looks perfect. Yep. And as Warhammer fans, that is really good to see, because it means that they could do Space Marine armor just as good if you get the money, I suppose.
We'll talk in and around that one, but no, that one's a secret of practical CGI happy marriage.
Yeah, and I think the story is fine. I think the story has enough intrigue to keep you, and it does a few key Fallout things based on my experience with the game that I think convey that feeling.
It felt Fallout.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like it was a solid show. Like, to me, it was no smash, but it did exactly what I feel like it needed to do for a Fallout adaptation.
Okay, I want to say this real quick. I don't know why it just popped into my head. It probably doesn't belong in this little segment, but I wish it would have showed her picking up just random things and stuffing it in her pocket. Like,
capture the full Fallout experience.
I really wish that there would have been some sort of her just stuffing random things into her pocket. Like, ooh, this is cool. I want to study that. Let me put that in my pocket.
Next season.
There are some other video game things, though, that they really do show, which are really good. But, yes, for the spoiler-free section, you get varying degrees of recommendation from the three of us. It is it's worth your time. Especially if you like if you're a person who doesn't play video games and you're really just coming to this for the first time in the series, it's fine. There might be some things like the whole Enclave thing that you don't know very well, but it's 50s retro futurism aesthetic, and it's a post-apocalypse show, so it's got Mad Max vibes because the game had Mad Max vibes.
I just want to say real quick, not to mention it has like killer beats.
Yeah, a lot of 50s music, which is very important to Fallout's feeling in general, especially when they alternate between having like nice classic oldies music over questionable material versus when things are silent. It's like when you're playing the game and you have your radio on or off when you're going to like a sewer or something. It's an interesting feeling. But yeah.
And then we can talk about music without going spoilers. And we'll kind of slip in. We're slipping into spoilers, but since we're on the topic of music.
Well, no, I think at this point here, we can cut and say, because that's the three of us giving positive reviews. Like, if I were, I don't like number ratings, but it's easy to put everything together. This is like a solid 7/8 out of 10 for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, going forward, we're going to talk about anything. So you've either seen it or you don't care.
All right, bitches, let's get on with it.
Well, hold on. While we're on the topic of the music, because that's such a small thing, they got the music right. And I don't know, that was like, it's such a stupid thing because this is 50s music from artists you mostly haven't heard of. There's some big names, and Buddy Holly gets in there, Frank Sinatra gets in there. But most of this is just, easy, made-for-radio stuff. But the fact that they picked not only songs from the games, but just songs in the era, and it worked so well, was the first sign of like, oh, no, they got this. They got the music. Everything else will fall in place,
Yeah, there's three bits of music in particular that they take directly from the games that are, like, perfect for different reasons. The first one is not even a lyrical thing. They took, in Fallout 4, when you're listening to the Minutemen radio station, it's essentially nothing but, like, violins and also patriotic fiddles. Kind of music. Fiddles, yep. Thank you. And so there's a whole bit in an episode that plays the exact same fiddle music. And it just locked in. Because music will do that. It will lock you into a certain like place in memory. And so that was cool. Second is the company store. Is that what it's called? You know, sold my life to the company store. Which is it's a song about literally a, you know, company owning a town and fucking over.
Oh, it's the idea of the company towns and unions and that companies would set up towns outside of major places and then charge you for every little thing out of your paycheck. And you'd end up owing the company money at the end of a 40-hour work week.
Which that song becomes the literal perfect manifestation of the core themes of Fallout in a lot of ways. And then the third song, and the most important one, the one that is most associated with Fallout from my understanding, is it, I don't know what it's called, but it's the I Don't Want to Set the World on
That's
Fire.
That's what I call it. It's the I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire song.
World on Fire.
And it was literal goosebumps like, oh, cool, they've got me. This first episode has the hook, and it's all just the music.
Yeah, but that song at this point is more associated with Fallout than basically its original conception.
Yep. But how they use the music works so perfectly. Because again, as you pointed out, when the music's playing, it's like, oh yeah, no, it's this fun. It makes it feel Fallout. And then when there's silence, it's like, oh no, okay, this is kind of, again, music is perfect. They do that great in this.
Do we want to start from like the beginning of the series and just kind of work our way through it? Or
kind of, because I got notes for each episode, but I think we can start from the beginning and work our way through. Or do we want to do it by character? Well, we can't do it by character because the characters bleed together a lot.
Well, no, I think we can do for... Okay. So this show has three main characters. We've got Lucy, played by Ella Purnell, Maximus, played by Aaron Moten, and the ghoul, also known as Cooper Howard, played by Walton Goggins. I love that once he's the ghoul, no one ever calls him Cooper Howard.
Yep.
Though. Yep.
And a fundamental thing that got brought up, I first was told to me before I even saw the series by someone else who I did not want the series spoiled for me, but this just came up. And it's very cool. These three characters basically represent three fundamentally different ways a player engages with Fallout the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ella Purnell's Lucy is basically like if you took the high charisma, almost pacifistic, not fully, she shoots some rad roaches and a ghoul at one point, but she still talks people down. She uses a lot of negotiation, tries to use a tranquilizer at the beginning of the series. She's very much the, I don't want to stick to the D&D alignment, fuck that. So she's just the, what you might call the good playthrough, the goody two-shoes kind of playthrough. Even though she gets kind of corrupted by the wasteland, she still keeps to her core self. There's a whole thing that happens in literally the very last few scenes that kind of changes that, but we'll get to that later. Maximus, Aaron Moten's character, is more like a neutral run. He's trying to find his role in the world. He wants to protect people, but he's also willing to watch people die or crush people's heads if they're threatening him. Mm-hmm. And so he wants to be a knight. He wants to be something that he looked up to when he was young because he was born in the wasteland and he wants to make it better. So yeah, neutral. Some good, some bad, some in between. And then the ghoul is the most interesting because he's arguably the evil playthrough. I'd more call it the selfish playthrough.
I was going to call him like chaotic neutral or something like that.
Yeah. Because this thing is, he'll kill anyone. But he's not, like, going out of his way to torture people necessarily. There's a sequence involving him and Lucy that indicates he might, but then we find out stuff about him later in his relationship to Vault-Tec that kind of recontextualizes it a bit. But, yeah, he's very much, he has his own agenda, and he doesn't care who dies or along the way to him getting what he needs.
He's a bit of a nihilist. And, I mean, given the shit he's seen, it makes sense. He's like, no, I got my own shit and I'm going to do what I need to do to make sure I get what I need.
And because of that, the way these characters interact is it kind of lends from that. When Lucy and Maximus meet, it's very much a, we'll start working together and they start affecting each other. There's literally a whole episode about them, their viewpoints about a certain thing going swapping between the two of them and then kind of swapping back again and then coming to a point of agreement. It's the episode with Vault 4. But Yeah, it's about the, like, okay, the good person and the neutral person are working together, and the neutral person's helping the good person be a little edgier, while the good person's helping the neutral person be a little nicer. Meanwhile, when the ghoul first meets them, it's a fight with the neutral person.
It's a big, cool shootout.
Yeah.
Like, a very well-done Western style.
It does have some technical problems. I love it in concept, but there were a number of continuity errors within it. Normally, I don't care about that, but the fact that I was distracted by it was annoying me. Anyway, not important. Meanwhile, when the ghoul meets with Lucy, he enslaves her. There's not really a better way to say it. And then tries to sell her to an organ black market thing.
Which I want to know what the hell they were doing there.
Yeah, I don't know. But the point is that that's how these three characters get to have their own journeys, but interact with each other and their interactions. The ghoul is the most disconnected. Maximus and Lucy spend a lot of the time like on their journeys together by the time like episode 3 or 4 happens, I think. But the ghoul basically interacts with Maximus once ever and spends like one episode with like Lucy in his control. And then other than that, he's doing his own thing. And we even spend half of the time with him flashing back to before the nuclear bombs drop when he was a regular person.
Yeah.
Now I just want to interject here. This is where I was talking about. I wish that they would have given us more information. I want more information on the ghoul because he's such an interesting character.
Yeah.
And I'm very interested to know what happened to his daughter, you know, all this other stuff. Like, I know it's a tragic fucking story, but I really wanted to know about it. And the fact that we didn't get any sort of closure on his story, honestly, kind of leaves me like,
Well, that's the hook for season 2.
Here's what's interesting about that. Because, again, we're in spoiler thing. Well, we find out the ghoul's whole thing, right? Before the war, before the nuclear drops, the ghoul was an actor. Cooper Howard was an actor, but he was also a cowboy, like an actual cowboy and a Marine. So he's an actual soldier. He had a wife, he had a daughter, he had a dog. In the very first scene of the series, we see him with his daughter out doing like kids' birthday parties when the bombs fall.
And that is such a fucking great cold open.
Yeah, because she's all like, daddy, like the thumb and everything. And we're like, aw, shit.
And then just the book it. And you're like, oh, fuck. Because again, you know what's coming. You know where this is going. You're like, this is fallout. This is right before the war. They've got all these great Easter eggs. You're like, at some point, the bomb is going to drop. And this father and his little girl are going to have to run like hell. But it's fallout. We know you don't. This doesn't end well for you. You know?
Yeah. But key point, one of the people at the party says to another, why is Cooper Howard working kids' parties? And and the other guy says, the same reason anyone might, alimony. So that tells us right off the bat, oh, okay, so he's separated from a wife, and his career is in the shitter. And then later on that same sequence, someone accuses him of being a commie, not to his face, but so the next time we see the flashback, it's way before that sequence where he's with his loving wife and he's a successful career man. And by the end of the series, we haven't seen him and his wife divorce and we haven't seen him get accused of being a communist. So there's still,
we've got the puzzle places have slowly been slid into place.
Yes, we know where he's going. We just don't know quite where he's got there. And key point, he was with his daughter when the bombs fell. But at the end of the series, we find out his entire goal is trying to find his family. Now, it's very easy to understand where his wife might be. They basically tell us that she's probably cryogenically frozen somewhere.
But yeah, there is a theory about her.
Yeah, but he was with his daughter. Why doesn't he know where she is? That's the big question.
Yeah. I don't know, just lots of questions.
Yeah, and I love it. I
wish I could just smack a writer and get them to tell you what's going on.
Yep. No, that is, again, where I think this show is at its best. It really does have that hook of like, all right, I'm in. What comes next? It feels like a Fallout game, you know? Like the basic structure is like, oh, I'm playing a Fallout game. Now, we don't have the fun, crazy side quests as much in a Fallout game.
No.
In fact, they even call us out for it with the Golden Rule of the Wastelands.
Thou shalt always get sidetracked by bullshit every goddamn time.
Which, yeah, okay, fair.
I wish I could do the accent the way that Walton Goggins does it.
Like, again, that's a good accent. All the praises. Everyone in this show is doing a great job.
Let's talk about how the different quote-unquote mindset of these people are. Because I remember looking at Ulrich and being like, this is so fucking weird, because they, because the main character and her cousin hook up and shit, and the way that they act is just like sex to them. It doesn't fucking matter. They don't have the same like principles that we do and stuff. So everything about it is so different. I don't know, but it's also silly at the exact same time.
Yes, it's a great way of setting up the vaults.
What Scyther's touching on there specifically, they make it clear in a few sequences that the residents of Vault 32, where Lucy comes from, do not view sex the same way that we as Americans descended from the prudish Puritans do. She sees sex as very normal, unstigmatized, not something to be embarrassed about. She talks openly about, well, you know, doing cousin stuff's fun and all, but it's not viable for reproduction, so we have to go do other things for that. When she meets Maximus at one point, she casually asks him if he wants to have sex, to which he's flustered by and has some inaccurate knowledge about how it works. But she just takes it in stride. She's like, oh, you know, if you want to do it, we can do it this way. And he goes, I'm not supposed to. And she goes, okay.
No, it's...
I know, but it's refreshing, and I feel like that is what us as a society right now are trying to push towards. And I don't know, I just I thought it was refreshing. I thought it was really nice that they were just like, yeah, okay, this is it. You want to do it? Why not? Like,
well, it is funny because it's a very... We live in America, in the United States of America, and really the way sex is treated here is fundamentally different than it's treated in a lot of other places. Now, again, I have not traveled to Europe. I don't know firsthand if this is the case, but I've listened to a lot of people.
Other countries have sex education classes. In America, the sex education is don't do it.
Yeah, okay, I mean, look at, example, Paul Verhoeven himself talked a lot.
Oh, the Dutch.
Yeah, about how in the Dutch treat sex is like extremely casually, comparatively.
Yeah. No, again, I just loved it because everything we see from Vault Tech establishes like, oh, there's, you know, kind of like, then you get the cousin fucking line and you're like, oh, okay, they're a little bit weird, but underground people, fair enough. I'm curious, when did you clock the Raiders?
When like, did I clock the Raiders? I think honestly, the moment I was supposed to. I mean, well, no. Okay, the moment that they were eating with their forks and stuff that way, which I knew something was wrong, but I thought that there might have been, like, a blight in Vault 33 that meant that they were, like, starving for a long period of time and they were going feral. I didn't think that it would be actual surface dwellers.
No. I
agree with that. I agree with that, Axel. That's what I thought, too. I thought that they were... Because they had talked about how, you know, they were suffering and everything else, and then, like, for the dowry and stuff, like, they were like, you know, we'll give you all these seeds and everything else. It does kind of set it up like they are going through something and are kind of starving and stuff. It wasn't until, they started really honing in on, like, the tattoos and stuff that I was like, okay, something's a little weird.
Yeah, honestly, I think that having played Fallout games actually put me at a disadvantage there, because I can't think of a single instance of Raiders basically pretending, like disguising
being,
to get something.
Yeah, that competent.
They're more like Borderlands Raiders in general, where they're kind of just crazy fuckers. So the idea that Raiders could do a trick like that never entered my mind.
No, I clocked it almost immediately because, and again, it wasn't anything more than there's a brief camera moment where it pans over and you can see one of the people has a really nasty neck tattoo. And my brain went, Vault Dwellers aren't going to have neck tattoos.
Okay, to be fair, when I watched episode one, I watched it on my phone.
Oh, that's not a good way to watch it.
Yeah, I was, well, because I had to watch it quickly in a couple days, and I had to do it while I was working out. It was the only time I could find. So I couldn't tell it was a tattoo. I thought it was a scar. So again, I thought it was like that they were fighting each other in the vault.
Nope, the neck tattoo tipped me off, and then there's like another scene where you see a big nasty scar, and you're like, okay. But you say, and then the food scene, like, oh, they're fucking Raiders. Okay, cool. What's the ploy here?
They were giving each other shifty eyes and stuff. Like they were really hamming it up in that scene. Really going, all right, guys, do not see that there's something going on here.
Well, again, I was fairly certain, like, oh, these people are going to attack the vault. Like, I knew that. But again, I kept coming back to, I think that something went wrong or right, depending on experiments, in vault 33, and they're going to try to, or 32, or what that point is, the other one, and they're going to try to murder these vault dwellers to take their shit.
Yeah. Like,
that's what I kept thinking.
But it doesn't really matter, because that's not the whole big thing, because the mystery isn't that they're raiders, it's, you know, the woman showing up and kidnapping Lucy's father, which, okay, it's Kyle MacLachlan. I'm always going to be suspicious of Kyle MacLachlan in a TV series or movie. Like, you play a bad guy too well.
I mean, did you watch Twin Peaks?
No, I need to watch Twin Peaks.
I don't know if you'd like it, but
I don't know if I would either, but it's one of those cultural milestones.
Yeah, I agree. I actually didn't care for it, but I understand what Twin Peaks is and I respect it anyway.
But yeah, no, I was more suspicious of him. It's like, you're never a straight up good guy. Why are you being kidnapped?
Okay. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the mystery behind what Vault 31.
It's there 33.
Well, the mystery is Vault 31. But so again, if you're coming into this not having any prior knowledge, then I think it's interesting, because you don't have any expectation of what vaults are.
Yep. You're just hey, these are idyllic little bunkers. They're a bit kooky, but they've been trapped underground. That makes sense.
Now, I believe it's episode 6 or 7 where they fully reveal, like, the concept that experiments are conducted. Six
is the one. Because I did notes for every single episode, like the big highlights that I wanted to call out.
There's a point that they go to another vault, right? Vault 4, and they find that Vault 4, which we had learned about before, was run by scientists, and they were conducting mutation experiments on people. And that's all well and good, but the key point of this is that the current people living in Vault 4, who are the descendants of those who rebelled against the scientists, ask Lucy what the experiment was in her vault. And that's a cue to the audience members who don't already know that vault equals experiment.
Also, I love the misdirect of Vault 4. Is like, the minute they drop in and there's like experiment room, you're like, oh shit, they're going to experiment on them. They're in danger. And it's like, no, they were never in any danger at all. They are in fact the danger. I'm like, that is some Fallout level flipping the script, and I can appreciate that.
But as someone who played the games, one of the coolest parts about playing Fallout, period, is going to a location and finding holotapes or books or computer terminals and finding out what happened at that location. Yep. Vaults are the best, because they tend to have these like crazy stories. But literally, you look at Fallout 3 or 4 at the very least, and almost every location that's larger than like a shack is going to have some sort of story of something that happened there. And that's a lot of the fun. So they got to translate that feeling into the show.
Yeah, no, 4 is fun because, again, the whole story is scientists in this universe left for their own devices will create monsters.
Yeah. It's hilarious when they see a holotape of the scientists right as they die, and they're like, don't take what happened here as proof that what we're doing is wrong.
As he's eaten by a gulper, which, holy shit, gulpers are even more terrifying in this version than they ever were in the game. The fact that their mouths are full of thumbs.
Were gulpers in the game?
Fingers.
Gulpers are in Fallout 4.
I've not seen them in Fallout 4. I've seen, you know, Mirelurks. I've never seen I don't remember seeing a gulper ever.
Yeah.
No, they're kind of annoying and they run funny, but when you see that the mouth's full of fingers, this is like, oh, that's a level of horror that I'm not going to be able to get out of my mind. One thing
I want to get out real quick that's not important, and it's... So, I think Ella Purnell is a fairly decent actress, and I think she's gorgeous. Her eyes are so huge.
Yep.
I was like, she is a fucking anime character. I actually looked up to see if she was a Battle Angel Alita, because I kept thinking about it the whole time I was watching her.
I had that thought, but it sells so well as this, what is this strange place? Can we be friends? That works perfectly.
I just never seen a person whose eyes really look like an anime character without like any CG enhancement. I was just, I mean this in the best possible way. I was amazed at how expressive and
no, I had that thought are. And it's like perfect. You are the perfect casting for this wide-eyed wanderer.
Inversely, I will also say an actor that we haven't talked about yet, but I was continuously impressed by is the actor playing Lucy's younger brother. Because episode one sets him up as essentially the annoying shitstick, like yep. kind of the kind of character you normally would hate in anything else. And then the rest of the series is him actually being way cannier than everyone else left in the vault, and him actually caring about figuring out what's going on, and little acting cues where like he's looking at something, and you just see like his neck move a little bit, like he's really thinking about what he. I don't know. The actor's name is looks like Moises Arias. I can't pronounce that, but he was great.
So I wanted to say real quick, I only know him from Disney. And so when I saw him in this, I was like, ah, damn, it's this fucking Disney actor. Like, it's going to be boring. I don't want to watch this. And honestly, I was a little upset when we kept getting more Vault episodes and he was the main character for it and stuff. At first, just because, like I said, he was a Disney actor. And I was just like, I don't want to deal with this. But I agree. He did excellent. I love how inquisitive he was. I don't know. And there were so many scenes where we were following him as he was exploring the vault that I was just like, oh, man, something's got to happen. Like, something's got to happen to him.
No, when he gets over to 32 and just all the charred corpses, I'm like, what the fuck happened here?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are two other actors I want to call out by name real quick, just because I found their performances engaging. One is Matt Berry.
Yes! Holy shit!
Voice of Mr. Handy. Who's that?
That's Laszlo.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, he's a...
He's Mr. Handy, but like the coolest, like, we'll sprinkle in like the fun Fallout revelations or anything. Mr. Handy was a movie character before he was a robot.
Was he?
Yes, because there's a scene when him and Cooper are talking and he's like, he's talking about, you know, I never expect, like, they give him a Mr. Handy and he's like, he says something about voicing the character in a movie and now he has it, you know, following him around the house asking if he had a good shit today.
Yeah, and to be clear to anyone who doesn't know, when Ulrich says he's Laszlo, it means he's from What We Do in the Shadows. I recognize his face immediately. And
yeah.
Yeah, his voice is great. He has only one scene of on screen. He has a couple scenes where he gets to voice a character that's a robot, essentially. But his one scene where he's on screen, he kills it as this like actor who is frustrated with what's happening and has given up essentially the entire rights to his voice for pocket change because it's the only option he has.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do want to say, Ulrich, that you were afraid that he was going to come off as just another fucking character of this actor's. Because remember,
he,
you know, what he plays in the shadows, that is his Laszlo character. But then he's also got that.
He's in Crapopolis where he's just playing.
Where he's literally playing himself again.
Yeah. And
so when we heard him in as Mr. Handy, we were like, "Ah, crap. Is he just going to play Laszlo again?"
No, it's Mr. Handy, and it's like, "No, that voice fits perfectly."
And then the last actor that I want to call out by name, because I actually can't find the name of the scientist, but he deserves attention too, is Johnny Pemberton, who plays Thaddeus,
the
other squire, who just like with the younger brother. Yeah, just like with the younger brother, I thought was going to be an annoying character.
He generally plays annoying characters. That's kind of been his role.
Yeah, and he kind of is, but he's also kind of endearing. And you kind of go back and forth on, at least I did, on whether you like him or not, till by the end, you like him. I mean, he literally just like walks. I mean, the end of his story is he becomes a ghoul and knows that the Brotherhood will fucking murder him. So he's like, okay,
I'm out. Well, you should. I hate ghouls. They're gross and scary.
Yeah, but you almost kind of feel bad for him.
You do, which is a great transition. Like, at first, like, oh, you're just the shit heel piece of shit. I hate you. And then as time goes on and he kind of gets his talk with Titus and he's like, it's sad that he died because,
I got to cut you off just because very specifically he gives an explanation of why he was basically causing the group to beat up Maximus, but his explanation is the most understandable human realistic thing in the world, which is just, hey man, they all used to kick the shit out of me, and then he showed up and he was the new guy, so I got them to kick the shit out of him instead of me.
Kick, yeah, no, and it also, it's a great insight into how the Brotherhood is run. It's like, they don't care, which is also kind of like a further insight into the state of this world.
Yeah.
Also, while we're just throwing out small props, they cast a non-binary actor, you know, didn't make a big deal of it. Like, hey, Fallout has non-binary characters, and they did a great job. It was just like, oh, cool.
Yeah, I know, it made me so happy to see that.
But holy shit, that foot trauma scene will also haunt me.
Yeah, it was terrifying.
Oh, God.
And like, listen, there's a lot of ways to sabotage yourself. Don't do that one. Fuck.
I know, I was going to say, what didn't they do it to themselves?
They did it themselves. And it's like, no.
Okay, so as someone who likes to harm themselves... That would take a lot of fucking courage and guts to go, I know that there's a sharp ass fucking blade in my boot right now, and I'm just gonna stuff that sucker right on my fucking foot. And they went for it.
Yeah.
And my God, I felt for them.
No, I also love, like, listen, I love the Brotherhood of Steel, but I love that they kind of called out Lucy Ass. I'm like, well, are they a good organization? Well, you know, it's complicated.
I do love the fact that they're like, yeah, we save technology, but you can't look at it. You can't read it. You can't listen to it. It's ours.
I just love that they did like, no, the Brotherhood of Steel, we're complicated.
Sorry, real quick, Michael Emerson is Will Zig, the scientist. The fact that it took me that long to find his name. Oh, okay. All right. Sorry.
No, this show is packed with great actors doing really good jobs.
Yeah, there's a lot of other little performances.
Like a lot of people just show up like, oh shit, you're here. Cool.
Like there's this guy who I don't remember the character's name, but he's a vault dweller who's an older vault dweller who basically can't help himself but tell people who he's gonna vote for
in the
thing. And it's just two scenes, like that's it, and then one little look he gets later, but he leaves an impression.
No, the vault stuff is great. The vaults look really good. This looks like Fallout, which is I think the biggest achievement of production design. Busted their ass.
It's also the most appealing the vault suits have ever looked. I can see myself wearing it now.
Okay, so you said vault suits, and that immediately brought up the meme that I had saw of the main character, Lucy. There was a screenshot of her in her outfit. It was probably the trailer or whatever, and she was wearing her outfit, and her butt looked pretty flat and stuff, normal person and stuff. And somebody put right next to it what she should look like, especially if you look at Fallout 4. The Fallout for her would have had a badonkadonk. And people are like, nah, this is no way. But then you go and look at every fucking vault dweller, every time you put on one of their suits, you got a badonkadonk.
I was about to say, there's a sequence like in episode 7 or 8 where we literally see her walking from behind. And Ella Purnell has a shape. It's very obvious in those sequences. So it just means that those original shots were, you know, angles and lighting can do a lot. That's all I mean.
Oh, I know. It just made me laugh because I immediately thought about the meme where everybody's complaining that she doesn't have a round enough butt. Like, she doesn't have a big enough bubble butt. And then there was just a whole bunch of examples of, you know, in the in-game where, you know.
No, bullshit. In-game, Bethesda has never made a character that you want to sleep with without mods.
I'm not saying sleep with. I'm saying they've just got a giant on them. Like, if you look at every fucking vault dweller or anybody that you put, any character that you put into a fucking vault suit, they've got a giant fucking bubble butt.
Maybe.
Like, they look like they have worked out their glutes for years.
I will say, as a quick...
not maybe, it is a true.
Fair, but I will also say, Ulrich, you are definitely wrong, because Serana from Elder Scrolls exists, and...
Exactly.
And listen, fan art is carrying that torch for you.
I do not think so at all. But anyway, I will also say that it's not Ella's fault because, again, like, Walton Goggins, who I do not think is necessarily that attractive a man, he's got a lot of forehead, but in this series, Yeah, he's sexy as hell, even in the ghoul makeup.
No, why does the internet want to have sex with the ghoul?
Hey, you, I don't want to hear you say anything, okay? I, as the woman here, I will have to say that, yes, ghouls do look weird. But Walter Goggins, there's something about his charisma and the way that he just pulled off the fucking role that makes you go, well,
listen, I'd like to do it at least once. Shriveled corpse, Mr. Burns, no nose is doing it for you.
Okay, I'm sorry, but in Fallout 4, I quite frequently romance the ghoul, okay?
I know, you're a ghoul lover, and it shames the whole family.
Now, I will admit, and this is not Goggins' fault, really, but the first time I remember seeing him, like really seeing him in a performance, was in Sons of Anarchy.
Yep.
And yeah, it is kind of tailored my seeing him in other things. Which, if you don't know, in Sons of Anarchy, he's a transsexual prostitute.
He's a transgender prostitute, I believe.
Yes, transgender prostitute, yes.
Yeah, sorry, correct terminology is as more like what they're saying in the show, but you're right. He's a transgender prostitute. I apologize. But point is that it's a very strong sequence in Sons of Anarchy.
But he does so good in it.
Oh, absolutely. Again, Walter Goggins always shows up.
Walton, by the way.
Yeah, Walton. That's right. He's got an interesting name and an interesting face.
But anyway, my point is, yes, Ulrich, you get to be in the minority here. Because again, I don't find ghouls attractive. And I only find some men attractive in general. I'm complicated.
Okay, but, I'm not saying that him as a ghoul is attractive. I'm saying that the charisma,
that's what I'm saying, yes,
the character that he has really makes you as a person go, well, let's try it.
No, that's my point. That's what I'm saying, is that even in the ghoul makeup, his riz is so strong that I'm like, oh, damn. Okay.
Because him as, I hate to say it, I really fucking do, but his hairline and everything else, Walton Goggins, I have to say, is not a very attractive
man.
He's
a character actor for a reason.
His roles, the shit that he fucking does, really makes you believe in him and what he does.
Yeah. Baby, so Bobby,
I
Billy.
To say, I got a hard-on for the ghoul.
Anyway. Who,
also, again, another fun little lore update. He's the Vault-Tec mascot. He is the little Fallout man.
That's awesome. Yeah,
I love that.
I told you. I was like, he looks... They are putting him up to be the Vault-Tec, the Vault-Tec bobblehead and everything like that. Like, it just fucking worked for me. I immediately got that, and I immediately was like, is he supposed to be the Vault-Tec bobblehead? Like, is he supposed to be the mascot and stuff? Yeah. And we're like, and Ulrich was like, yeah, I don't know. And then it turns out that he actually is. And I was like, fuck you, bitch. I fucking knew.
I was under the assumption, like, no, this is Fallout. They must have lore behind their mascot. Turns out there's a deep, angry fan divide in that one. Not going to go into, other than goddamn nerds are weird.
I'm not surprised if there was already an explanation for...
There really isn't. It's just the fan divide is whether the thumbs up is intentional or not.
Like, see, I love the idea that a Marine who was told the thumb thing just did it for a photo shoot for Vault-Tec, and then they took it and monetized the fuck out of it. Yep. I think that's a brilliant bit.
He did it for his wife. He didn't do it because he wanted to. He did it because his wife was his manager and was like, hey, you should do this. And he's like, all right, I trust you. Let's do this.
In the moment, what I just mean is in the moment, he was like, what about a thumbs up? Should I do that? And then we find out in the first scene that the whole reason he did that was because they, in the military, they taught him that if you put a thumbs up over a nuclear explosion and your thumb covers it, then you can survive it. You still got to run. But so in the context of Fallout, he just did that as part of the photo shoot as something. And now, boom, all the Vault-Tec.
Iconic. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when the other fathers were dissing him and stuff at the birthday party.
Wouldn't even do the thumbs up.
That was especially when it sank to me in my head that he was the mascot and stuff.
No, I was totally confused. Like, why do they want him to do a thumbs up? Well, it must be from his movie. That's a weird thing for a cowboy to do.
All right, now, quickly, because we're getting pretty far in this conversation. But I want to also say something that we started in the spoiler-free part. So Aaron Moten is Maximus. Mm-hmm. When this show first started, literally for episode one, I couldn't tell what the guy was doing. And I think it's kind of on purpose. Like, you're the whole opening sequence, you're not supposed to know, I think, as an audience, whether he's telling the truth about if that him not putting the blade in his friend's boot. Like, it's supposed to be unclear, I think, to you. But what Aaron Moten is then doing is he's playing a character who... I don't know what the most correct terminology to say this is, so I apologize if I offend anyone. I'm trying not to. But, like, if he has autism, I wouldn't be surprised. Because he spends a lot of time just holding in everything and just, like, trying to watch everything around him. And he can't respond to things easily, and he's trying to figure out, like, how to navigate situations that...
Sorry, I was going to say, but that, couldn't that be explained too by the brief explaining of his early years, you know, the war and everything, and then seeing the Brotherhood guy and stuff like that? Couldn't that all be
trauma? You know, trauma can certainly affect you, but I'm saying that something about the performance specifically, because at first I felt I watched the first episode of my phone too. And then the more we watched, the more I was like, no, this is a character that just literally doesn't know how to socialize, how to correctly, like, interact in these situations, and doesn't even really understand his own feelings. He's trying to find something.
It could be that, but I think like a lot of it's just like they are in such a fucked up scenario of not only is this an apocalypse, but they're raised by a paramilitary pseudo religious order.
Yeah. So I want to say, while I think he is the weakest of the lead three, I still think he's doing a good job. It just took me like three or four episodes to,
he's to doing a lot of face acting, which is the thing I love is like, you watch him and like, oh, you have a dark side. You're going to be interesting to see what they do with.
Yeah, and they don't do a whole lot with that necessarily, but enough.
Again, by the end, which I love the big stupid fight between the NCR and the Brotherhood, and the scene where the two flag bearers charge past each other, turn around, see each other, and then uselessly start fighting.
I will say that I think that's the sequence that non-Fallout fans would probably find the most. Because even me, because I didn't play New Vegas, I was I have heard of the NCR. Yeah. I have no real concept of what the New California Republic is. So a lot of, I think, the weight of the Brotherhood War, which I found out today on the wiki is what that's called, is lost on me. And so must be lost on other people who didn't play New Vegas.
So I want to say real quick, because it kind of brought up, and I vaguely remember this, Ulrich, you're probably going to have to fill in for me, but I remember coming to you and saying, because everybody was talking about how the NCR had fallen, and, you know, the last shot of Fallout New Vegas in the series and stuff like that. But I think I remember saying something to you like, who's to say that the NCR fell immediately? Oh. Who's to say that it didn't work at first?
Here, let me actually, this is rather important. I had heard from our Discord that fans of New Vegas, some of them, were upset with the series for retconning or changing things that are not consistent with New Vegas. And I didn't, not having played New Vegas, I didn't know what that was. So I tried to Google it and find, like, people talking about it. And from what I can tell, there's a idea in New Vegas that the NCR is still in control of Shady Sands at the time of New Vegas happens, which is in 28, it's like 4 years after this is supposed to take place or something.
Okay.
It's
a timeline discrepancy.
Yeah, and then there's another timeline thing that talks about where the fall of the NCR, the fall of Shady Sands occurs, that is not in agreement necessarily with what New Vegas does. But I saw several other people in those, like, Reddit forums I was looking at say that that depends on how literally you take the timeline.
Exactly. That is the point that multiple people come up. It's like, one, guys, not everyone's going to have correct dating. Two, it's a number in a fictional setting. It doesn't matter. Two, New Vegas is fine. We'll keep telling you New Vegas is fine. Find a new obsession.
Yeah, because didn't the developers come out and say,
the Bethesda's gone, like,
everything
is fine.
Yeah, Bethesda came out literally and said that New Vegas is canon.
Always has been, always will be.
And the show's not and the show's not changing that. The guy who made New Vegas also came out and in his opinion, he said that he sees nothing in the show that impacts what he did. And he added, he doesn't care what they do.
Yeah. No, I just, again, it, the more thing, what I love is if you played New Vegas, it adds a whole fun new thing, because when we got to Shady Sands and we saw it was nuked, my immediate assumption was, oh, the Brotherhood came back and got revenge on the NCR, when in fact, it was Vault-Tec. Again, Vault-Tec being the ultimate villains.
And from what I've read, Shady Sands played a big part in Fallout 1 and maybe 2. Like in 1, yes, it's a small town that you gotta help.
Like one, basically the whole, like the founding of the NCR ties back to Fallout 1.
Yeah. But point is, from what I can tell, any discrepancies with New Vegas are either minor, vague, or easily accounted for by the fact that this is a wasteland that doesn't have the best.
Yep. Like, there's not somebody out there going, it's New Year's, everybody. Okay. Like, holy shit, you probably could have a fun side quest about people warring over the exact time.
Also, the end of the series, the very last shot, is the villain running off to Vegas. Do you think there's a reason why the showrunners decided to do that? Because they want to go to New Vegas. Why they want to do that? Because New Vegas is super popular. They wouldn't unwrite the game that they're obviously setting season 2 around.
It was dumb nerd shit, and I think that's all there is to say. It was nerds being dumb.
Okay, but let's say, I just want to say real quick that if season 2 does in fact have a lot of New Vegas content, I am really excited for that, because that just brings a bunch of nostalgia for me, and I can't wait to see what they're going to do with it.
Deathclaws. We know Deathclaws are coming.
Yeah, but the season one, it had a few digs at, or a few references to Fallout 4, a handful of Fallout 3, but it was primarily a Fallout 1 and 2 reference. That's why it's set on the West Coast, primarily. Yeah. And so now the next one is going to be seemingly primarily going to, New Vegas is going to be the point of reference.
But yeah, okay, let's talk about the end, the big reveals. In 1, we find out what's going on in Vault 33, and we find out what Lucy's father's up to the whole time.
Yeah, the only reason why I didn't see it coming was because I didn't expect them to essentially reuse Vault 101, or is it 111? Which is Vault 4?
Fallout 4 is Vault 111.
Oh, yeah, 101 must be Fallout 3 then.
Yes, 101 is Fallout 3.
Yeah, so because Vault 111 and Fallout 4 is cryogenically freezing subjects to see the long-term viability of cryogenic freezing. That's what the stated experiment of Vault 111 was. Whereas, so that's why I didn't expect cryogenic freezing to be core of the technology of a much lower numbered vault. But okay, I still think it works. I'm just saying it works. It's the only reason why I didn't see it coming.
No, I was trying to figure out what was going on. Again, the reason I didn't think was the guy who gets credited as Roomba on Brain on Roomba seemed so incompetent and just like an ass kisser. There was no way there was no way Vault-Tec was going to give him a vault. That was my whole reason. Like,
Well, okay, he's super incompetent, but he's incompetent in this exact way that every shitty manager is like.
And looking back on it, I should have seen that. Also, revelations that Vault-Tec caused the war?
Well, we don't know that for sure, but it's the implication.
And they caused it because they were at risk of losing money. I'm like, that's the satire I'm here for.
Okay, yes, but So, what Fallout the series implies is that if the peace talks between America and America's enemies, which is primarily China in the Fallout universe, don't go well, then Vault-Tec will just drop a bomb themselves. Their reasoning being, if we eliminate everyone who isn't in a vault, then we eliminate all the competition. We own the species then, which is a very dark, very
Fallout.
Helldivers, managed democracy kind of feel. Yeah, very Fallout. Now,
I don't want them to confirm it, because I love it as this kind of nebulous, like, that honestly makes a lot of sense, but the show kind of goes out of its way, even saying the line "war never changes." The reason the Wasteland can't get their shit back together is because people won't stop fighting for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Now, again, that doesn't mean Vault-Tec did drop the first bomb. It just means that they might have.
Which, again, I love it.
Knew about it.
Let's put that pin up there in possible causes of the Great War.
Here's the thing that no one watching this series and no one who only started in Fallout 3 is going to know, that I only found out a couple days ago. So, but I think is important to this particular part of the conversation. The point of the vaults, right, is not to save humanity to recolonize the planet. Because Vault-Tec is actually puppets of the Enclave. Well, what would become the Enclave? The United States government had its control in Vault-Tec, funding it so that they could then conduct these experiments, because their end goal was a multi-generation starship, so that they figured that they would destroy the planet so thoroughly that it was absolutely uninhabitable to any life. So they wanted to be able to create a ship that could travel for multiple generations to the stars, and they needed experiments on the best way to do that in with groups of people. So that's why the vaults, at least a lot of them, are set up that way, as like, okay, under these circumstances, how would people in the ship operate?
Yeah.
Now, you find out, I think in Fallout 2 is when a lot of this information comes out, that ship never happened, and the Enclave basically ditched the plans when it was shown that, okay, the planet's still habitable. It's fucked, but it's still habitable, so...
See, that might be a retcon they do, because they drop a line of... who has more money, you know, the government's like broke, who's their biggest funder, you know, contributor, Vault-Tec. The implication being Vault-Tec is the government now.
Yeah.
So that could actually make a nice Ouroboros of itself. Exactly.
It's likely if the dad is going somewhere in somewhere that can quote unquote controls Vault-Tec, and we aren't fully retconning, he would be going to something like the president.
Well,
it's a whole thing.
The theory is he's going to see Mr. House, who is the CEO of Robotech, who we see in the panel of, you know, corporate sponsors for the vaults.
Is it real quick, but is it just me? But I get pissed off when I think about the politics involved in all of the fucking world ending and the shit that the people have to fucking go through and everything else just because of fucking politics and
not politics, greed.
Exactly. I was going to say, who has the most money? Who has this? Who has that? Like,
I came here for escapism.
Well, again, the Fallout as a series is, I mentioned this at the top of our recording, is one of the most hypercritical, like, mass media things of capitalism that exists. And the fact that this show is positing that, hey, the top companies in America, the literally most powerful ones, literally were willing to kill 99% of the population so that they would eliminate all competition and have a, and they say the words, true monopoly.
Like, okay, let's be real. That would happen in our
fucking That is day happening.
And age.
I mean,
that is happening in our fucking day and age. They don't fucking give a shit about us. They just want more fucking money.
Well, listen, you know, if they had the technology to make vaults, like true vaults, the way they then probably the only reason why.
Hey, hold on real quick before you go on there. If you want to fucking talk about that, let's talk about all the fucking millionaires and billionaires right now
trying to get to space, building
bunkers.
Yeah,
that are building fucking bunkers.
Yeah, no, we're already living
dollar fucking bunkers. They know something we don't fucking know.
Yeah, they know they know the same things we know. They just have the
funds. Those bunkers ain't vaults. They aren't going to last.
Yeah, and no, they know the exact same things we know.
But they do know fucking something, Ulrich, okay?
No, they know the world is ending, and they're fucking it over. And like, you know what? I want to live my golden years.
Because they don't fucking care, but they'll be in the fucking 5% that are going to fucking live in this fucking world when they fucking crashes to the fucking world.
Yeah, it's far more likely that the mass rich are looking into terraforming technology and space technology to get shit like the Musk and whatnot to get off the planet. But as of right now, because we don't actually have... And also, remember, Fallout, while being extremely critical and extreme warning does actually underplay the effects of nuclear war.
Yeah.
By a lot. Yeah. Actual nuclear war, like full nuclear war, the kind that Fallout shows, would just kill everything on the world.
There's no
Yeah, there's no ghouls, there's no mutants, like, basically other than, like, cockroaches, everything's dying, and humanity's not going to survive that level of radiation.
Yeah, because didn't they show, like, multi-fucking nuclear bombs going off?
Well, every country fired on every other country.
Yeah. The one of the best examples is the opening of Fallout 4, where you literally see something like 4 or 5 different nukes going off in Boston. That's one city, and like 5 nukes are going off in it.
Listen, it's Boston. You got to be thorough.
Yeah, that's fair.
There are hardy folk. They'll come back. Oh, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. Really, so if I can get my own politics out in the fucking ready to get stabbed here, it's companies right now are... It's just that they're short-sighted. They're not actually interested in fucking wiping out everything because they don't have vault technology to protect them. So they are interested in people not killing each other, but they're also just extremely short-sighted about how to stop that. So they don't care about that. They care about making money in the now and not having nukes dropped.
Yeah. But anyways, other big things. We did the Roombas on the Brains. We did Lucy's father murdered her mother and an entire city because she left him.
Well, specifically, she left him, so he nuked the city that she was staying in.
Yes. And
turned her into a ghoul. I mean, which, it would have killed her, but...
Yeah, no, that's also... That's, again, one, I told you, Kyle MacLachlan never plays a good guy. And two, that is just some fucked up petty shit.
Yeah. Oh, and he has a line, something like, your mother stopped being your mother when she left the vault.
Yeah.
All right.
But again... The idea is they kept managers in middle management. This is the type of psychopath middle management would love.
Yeah. It's funny because, again, Fallout is very critical of a lot of things. Fallout, the series, is weirdly aiming its criticism in some ways directly at the concept of middle management. The fact that the ultimate, like, overseer villain is literally just a manager who believes that management is like the key word. And he keeps using that buzzword specifically. It's like they took Office Space and turned it into an apocalypse.
Yep. So real quick, because we're getting near the end. I want your guys' theory on this one, which is a theory I've heard. So, I don't remember the name of the overseer that eventually takes over. Is it Millie? Is it Bobby? It's something.
Betty?
Betty, that is it Betty? Anyways, Betty. There is a theory that that is the ghoul's wife.
No, it's not. We actually know exactly who Betty is. Betty, she showed up in one of the flashbacks.
Okay. I saw that and like, okay, but I thought, so that means.
Yeah, they call it out specifically. She is the
secretary. She's the secretary, yeah.
Brings Henry in, yeah.
That was when I was confused. Like, I thought it was her, but okay.
No, it's definitely her. People just probably missed that.
I missed the name, so I wasn't sure. Because like I missed her name. Like, but then that also means that, you know...
Oh, I almost think for sure that his wife, if she's not cryogenically frozen in Vault 31, she's probably frozen somewhere.
I think she's too high up to be in 31. She was running the show at Vault Tech.
She's one of like the two... Well, she was... Yeah, it's unclear exactly what her position is, because it's kind of positions her equivalently to Bud... But
she's got to be above Bud because she was pitching to the investors.
Yeah, but so was Bud. Bud was sitting right next to her.
That's true. I don't know. Other one, this is the one I don't know. I've been trying to figure out where she fits in. So, again, I can't remember the character's name. I just refer to her as the Firebrand because she's the one that gets, you know, the ghoul going on his whole path of, you know, hey, maybe communism is the way.
Moldover. It's Moldover.
Yes. How is she alive in the future?
See, that is the biggest question because she's not a ghoul. Nope. She had to have been cryogenically frozen.
Yep.
She was positioned against Vault Tech, so it's unlikely she came from Vault 31.
Yep. Again, she's the one I'm like, because at first I thought maybe cloning was going on, but and then remember, like, Fallout and cloning has not had good success.
Yeah. As far as I know, Fallout and cloning has happened one time, maybe more in other games, but the one time I know about, which is a vault in Fallout 3 that involves Gary... And about 52 different Garys.
Yeah.
And according to the terminals there, each Gary became subsequently more violent, and they could only speak their name like fucking Pokemon.
Yeah. So no, cloning doesn't work in Fallout. So that's a great mystery. Oh, also, I called the Vault Tech number and I have many, many regrets.
Oh. Supposedly, I heard, at least through like TikTok and social media and stuff like that, when you call the number, because it's Walton Goggins screaming, and like it's a terrible fucking sound. It's agonizing
screams. It's haunting. Like
that. I supposedly heard that it's supposedly when he was being turned into a ghoul or something like that, but I don't know how true that is.
All I know is it routed me to an LA area code. Which right. I thought was awesome. But yeah, no, it's haunting stuff. I'm like, oh, I regret calling that now. But I also love when TV shows take that extra step.
Yeah, I mean, I always go back to when God of War did it, but
that's right.
Cool when he does that. I believe that God of War one's still active.
Probably.
By the way.
Anyways, last real thoughts, hopes, predictions.
Like I said, I thought it was enjoyable. I loved everything Walton Goggins did. I think Ella Purnell is very, very promising. I think Aaron Moten is underrated, probably, and by my own estimation. So I think that the three will do. Oh, and we didn't talk about how Maximus's end is basically that he becomes, at least he gets championed by the rest of the Brotherhood as a knight, because now the Brotherhood of Steel is in control of an active cold fusion plant.
Yeah, which, that's, oh boy.
Yeah, that could lead to a lot of it. I literally felt like that's the setup for a future Fallout game, to like come back to California, a California where the Brotherhood is definitely dominant because of that cold fusion plant, but different story.
Yeah.
I think this is really successful, right?
Like, oh yes, people... this has been huge for Amazon.
Okay. One thing I think is interesting is that there was a time period where it was like, oh, is Netflix making this? Is Amazon making this? Is Hulu making this? Is HBO making it? Whatever. And that would tell you something about it. But I just don't feel like that exists anymore. Like, a lot of the... I don't know if everyone, but basically all of the big streaming platforms have released something, like, really catching. Like, I thought Apple TV was the worst until I saw fucking Ted Lasso and Severance. So, like, even they've got
shit. They're burning money to try and make streaming profitable.
Yeah, but my point is that whether it's fucking, you know, Netflix's One Piece, which was super fucking big, or Wednesday, which is actually amazingly huge, or it's the Boys and Invincible and Fallout and Amazon, it's like all the streams have something going on. So it's just, all right, where are the shows coming out? And if this is going to get a season two, it seems to be the case, then...
Yeah, cool. No, it's been confirmed for season two.
Yeah, we only got to see a Yaogwai and a Gulper. I would love to see more creatures. I want to see a Super Mutant.
Yep, Super Mutants are high on the list.
Yeah, like the Hulk exists. We can make a Super Mutant. And, of course, I want to see a Deathclaw, because Deathclaw is probably the most iconic creature in Fallout. Except for maybe a Rad Roach, but we've seen Rad Roaches.
Yeah, we've seen Rad Roaches. We need a glowing one.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So, like... I don't need a lot, because in this season we saw the Yaogwai, we saw, you know, power armor, we saw Rad Roaches, and we saw like Feral Ghouls. Okay, that's like four big things. Like, we don't need to see a Behemoth anytime soon. That's why we don't need to see a Myrlurk Queen anytime soon.
Oh fuck no!
But
maybe a Myrlurk like, King. They're easy enough.
But if we're going into New Vegas next season, you show me a glowing one and a Deathclaw, I'll be good.
Yeah.
Oh, and a Rad Scorpion. We're in the desert. Gotta get a Rad Scorpion.
Yep, gotta get a Rad Scorpion in there.
As for storyline,
I got no clue.
Again, I didn't play New Vegas, so I actually have no idea what to go off of. If we're just going off of TV stuff, well, he's gonna go find some backer, some sponsor in New Vegas, I guess Mr. House, and we're probably gonna have to deal with Maximus having to navigate the politics of the higher up structure of the Brotherhood of Steel.
I think Maximus is really cool because, again, as we saw, like, Maximus really is torn between loyalty to the Brotherhood and, you know, maybe being his own person.
I don't think he's that torn. I think by the end of the series, he wants out, and now it's a matter of he doesn't know how to get out.
I think that's true, but again, I think we're going to see him. I would like to see him slide back the other way and go, no, no, I can change this from the inside.
Sagathor, what are your thoughts?
I find him to be boring.
That's fine. I meant in general for like a season two.
Oh, as a season two, honestly, I don't know. I want to see more Vegas stuff. But other than that, I am here for whatever they do. I want to see some Fallout stuff from lore. I want to see some Fallout stuff from the video games. Like, I just want something fun and entertaining. I'm not going in with high expectations or anything. I just want it to be a good series. And so far, it has been. It has exceeded my expectations. It's exceeded a lot of people's expectations. And I think as long as they keep doing what they're doing, they're going to do great.
Here's one specific thing I want. We had no one in the present time recognize the ghoul as Cooper Howard. Fallout the series has multiple ghouls who have been around since before the bombs dropped. So we've got one that we know of here with Cooper Howard. And his friend indicated that he didn't even know how old the ghoul was. So yeah. I would love to have someone who somehow actually recognized, probably voice, because the voice is still there. They've seen they had saw the films. Like, actually recognizes, and I don't mean, because we had Henry at the end, but Henry was frozen. I want a ghoul, someone else who's lived that long, to recognize Cooper as Cooper. And you could even have something short and him kill the guy because the guy tries to make him do the thumbs up, and of course the ghoul doesn't want to do that. But that's just a scene I want. Small thing, but.
I do want to say real quick before we move on and stuff that I appreciated more background information on how ghouls are made, because yeah. I didn't know that. I didn't know that they slowly lost their themselves, and that's what made them feral and stuff. I loved seeing that part.
I always got that implication. I think there are a few dialogue things in the games that indicate, like, you know, going feral, but...
Nope. I always assumed there was feral ghouls and non-feral ghouls, and, like, a non-feral could eventually go feral, but I didn't know that it was, like, eventually you will all become feral, which only strengthens my hatred of ghouls.
I'm fairly certain, though, that the thing that they're drinking is a creation for the series, unless that was referenced somewhere. I don't know. I thought it might have been like Radaway at first, but
oh, you mean the thing, the chicken fuckers magic serum?
Well, the in general that the ghoul needs.
Oh no, literally... he's doing drugs. It's like
yeah, but it's something very specific because she says to him, "If you don't get that, you turn into them," and he nods. There's something very specific that he needs vials of that keep him from going feral. And the show
maybe implies... I just assumed it was this, you know, regular jet because ghouls are always heavy drug users in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, jet comes in a very specific container. It was not jet.
I don't know. But yeah, again, more fun, cool stuff because he's like the oldest ghoul, which interesting.
So far.
Yeah, again, in the games themselves, there are more than one ghoul that is pre-war.
Yeah. Well, no, great show. The power armor worked surprisingly well.
I love that Knight Titus is a douchebag.
Yeah.
Kind of a coward. It's just like, hey, he's this big imposing dude in armor, and he's not just a regular guy, but kind of a shitty guy.
A coward dies like a bitch.
Yep.
Because
I'm sorry, but just based on the games, if you're in power armor with your fists, you can still take a Yaogwai.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, you suck. You're losing to a Yaogwai. It's not Deathclaw. It's not even, you know, fucking Super Mutant.
Okay. Can we say real quick that the cheeky little funny moments that they had during the show, especially like when Maximus, is that was his name?
Yeah, Maximus.
Sees the Yaogwai or something like that, or the what's it called? The one with the fingers in the mouth.
Gulper.
Yeah. The Gulper.
Gulper, yeah. I want to say...
I have to say that they did a great job at making it a cheeky show too.
Oh no, the humor is perfect. Like, it really does the Fallout thing of this is grim and dark and horrible, but we've got some really great jokes.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've been talking according to my timer for an hour and 20 minutes, and I could talk more because here's one big thing I'll say for the series. It made me go restart Fallout 4. Probably about a year.
No.
And I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the game just like, because I probably put about 200 hours in Fallout 4. I'm going to go put probably another 40 into this game before I move on to something else.
There will more than likely be at least one or two Fallout related episodes in the main feed release just because there's other things I want to talk about in and around. And then, of course, maybe, hopefully, season two will be a week by week release and we can do like a weekly watch along. I don't know. I'm not going to promise anything because who the fuck knows when and if. Because this is a Jonathan Nolan project. It could be Westworld Season 2. Please do not be Westworld Season 2.
And we're not going to do Suggestions of the Week this time because Suggestion of the Week would be the thing we're reviewing since we all gave it a positive review. So yeah, Fallout.
Go see it. It's awesome.
Go see it. Yep.
Last things last. Amazon, you fucked up. Okay? I want Nuka-Cola. Cola flavored bomb-shaped bottles, not mango peach in a boring ass bottle.
Yeah.
So my girlfriend, who she made a comment to me that she wants a podcast nickname. I gotta think of a good one for her. But her dad is a huge Fallout fan. He's got the bobblehead and poster in his like game den, and he's got a shelf where he's got like six different Nuka-Colas from the previous releases that he just has kept there. And I admit, I had the Quantum once when Fallout 4 came out, and I don't remember what it tasted like. I remember liking it, but yeah, I would love some Nuka-Cola.
Yes. Yeah.
No, we have Nuka-Cola Victory, and it's mango peach flavor, the two worst soda flavors.
Okay, honestly, I thought it was an okay flavor, but when you think Nuka-Cola, you think a fucking cola flavor, not a peach mango flavor.
Yeah, either that or Quantum, but even Quantum I always imagine tasting like Pepsi Ice.
Exactly.
Yeah. And again, cool bottle. You could have sold so many of those if we're that cool bottle.
Anyway, Slagathor, thank you for joining us for this review.
Of course.
And Ulrich, take us into the outro.
This is the outro. This is patron. This is for patrons. We don't have an outro.
Oh, fair.
I would say it's we can chalk it up to it's been a while since we've done one of these, but Axel always forgets that Patreon things don't have outros.
Why not? It's a good outro. Anyway, whatever.
Bye, Patreon. Have a good night. We'll see you all later.